Hello, I'm Matthew, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 6th of May, 2026.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have me, Matthew, Angela, Muhammad, Helen, Mina, Simon, and of course not forgetting Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Helen and Muhammad, some fascinating news and nostalgia from across the Black Country. You'll have to be sharp of mind, as we have another challenging quiz from Roger. We continue our journey round Narikin with Michael and Leslie Brackier. And of course, we have the latest goings-on from the village of Leaford, our exclusive drama series, written by local authors John Marks and Michael Brackier, with audio also provided by Michael and Leslie Brackier. With the UK's living costs continuing to spiral, we introduce another episode of an exclusive six-part series, providing further insight into our lifeline service, Black Country Food Bank, from the initiatives and projects through to interviews with the team of volunteers. Local news to start, though, with me, Matthew, and Angela.
You may recall the selfless achievements and marathon efforts of Wolverhampton's Manny Singh from last week's edition. This week, we're equally inspired to learn about a blind artist who has achieved a world first, completing a marathon using smart eyewear. Clark Reynolds, a blind runner and braille artist, completed the Brighton Marathon on the 12th of April, supported by volunteers who viewed his route through his MetaSmart glasses and Be My Eyes app. Reynolds, known professionally as Mr. Dot, has retinitis pigmentosa and only 5% vision. Reynolds took on the Brighton Marathon Challenge to raise funds for Fight for Sight, for which he is an ambassador, raising more than £2,700. The Be My Eyes app connects people who are blind or who have low vision with volunteers worldwide through live video and artificial intelligence. An in-app feature also allows users to create private, dedicated volunteer circles. This has recently been made available on Meta AI glasses. For the marathon, Reynolds' volunteers were carefully selected and briefed in advance to ensure he could always reach familiar and prepared supporters when he needed assistance. Reynolds completed the marathon in just under 6 hours and 20 minutes. Commenting on the achievement, Reynolds said, "We did it. I'm absolutely over the moon. I am now the first blind person to run a full marathon while being supported by volunteers using smart glasses and Be My Eyes." He explained that his aim was to push the boundaries of what the technology could do for him as a blind person. An experienced runner, Reynolds has previously completed the London Marathon with a guide. As a backup safety precaution for his Brighton Marathon challenge, a trained guide runner provided by the Richard Whitehead Foundation's Support Runner Project, Alistair Ratcliffe, ran alongside. Reynolds thanked Ratcliffe and the volunteers who supported and cheered him on through the Be My Eyes app on the day and throughout training. There were a few moments during the marathon where connectivity was lost due to broadband width, caused by the volume of people at the event, but this did not present a problem for the runner. The potential of this technology for people with sight loss is incredible. It's opening up a whole world of opportunity, and more people are using it in their everyday lives. There's so much to be hopeful about, he shared. Running the marathon with the support of the smart eyewear and Be My Eyes technology has sparked conversations, Reynolds said, which I hope will help to challenge society's ideas about what blind people can do. Be My Eyes volunteer Julie Sutton presented Reynolds with his medal at the finish line, who then presented a medal to backup guide runner Ratcliffe. Including the weeks of training and the day of the marathon, Reynolds has been supported by around 150 individual Be My Eyes volunteers from around the world through the app. Describing what it was like to train while using the app, he shared that volunteers were blown away that he was training for the marathon, adding, "They're expecting me to ask, where is the soup? Or help me to a shop. I love making the connection with people, telling them about why I'm running and about Fight for Sight's work. They're always really interested and love being part of something so out of the ordinary," he said. Eleanor Southwood, MBE Director of Impact and External Affairs for Fight for Sight, said, "We are so proud of Clark. What he has achieved is extraordinary. We are so grateful to him for his support and to everyone who has so generously sponsored him, raising over £2,600 for Fight for Sight." If you would like to learn more about the free Be My Eyes app and or experience the Ray-Ban Meta glasses for yourself, you can do so by calling Beacon on 01902 880 111 and speaking with one of the team of sight loss advisors.
Up next, we have the Beacon update brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey everyone, my name's Mo and I've got the latest news for you from across the Beacon with this week's Beacon update. First up, last week was National Gardening Week and we've certainly been getting our fingers green here at Beacon. Our members have been learning new skills as we kick off our Grow Wild Gardening project, both at the centre and across our charity shops. At the moment, we're nurturing seedlings indoors, which will soon brighten up our centre with planters and some colour to our shop hanging baskets. The project is supported by Grow Wild UK, the national outreach programme of the Royal Botanical Gardens, Kew, and we can't wait to see everything grow. Next up, we'd really like to hear from people living with sight loss. Beacon is helping to explore how cancer research can be made more accessible, and your voice could make a real difference. You don't need to have cancer to take part. To find out more or get involved, visit www.beaconvision.org/cancer-research-trials. Now, a quick thank you to Nathan Stiles, our event photographer, for running the Great Birmingham Run in aid of Beacon last Sunday. We really appreciate your support in front and behind of the camera. And finally, we've been out and about this week. The Black Country Cancer Tour Bus was in Dudley on Stafford Street car park on Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Thank you to everyone who said hello and had a friendly chat and learned more about general health and the support available in your local area. There was also a marketplace event at Provision House, along with two GP surgeries joining us. So there was plenty on offer and we hope you enjoyed the day. And that's all from me this week. Thanks for listening and take care.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed and Helen. Next up, with the UK's living costs continuing to spiral, with thanks to Black Country Food Bank's Deputy CEO and Operations Manager Keely Jones, we introduce another episode of an exclusive 6-part series providing further insight into a lifeline service, from the initiatives and projects through to interviews with a team of volunteers. Introducing another episode of Black Country Food Bank.
Could you tell us what inspired you to start volunteering at Black Country Food Bank?
During my teaching career, I first encountered food poverty. Found children scavenging in bins, picking up sandwiches or fruit that people hadn't to take home. After that, I met Wendy, who started Food Bank. And we decided then that all our harvest from our primary school would go to Black Country Food Bank. And when I knew that they were going to set up a food bank in Netherton, and it was going to be based here, then it was a no-brainer. I was ready to come and help and do whatever I could.
What does volunteering mean to you personally?
Oh, it means such a lot because you feel that you're making a difference. I think to be volunteering at Food Bank means that you're part of something bigger.
What's the most rewarding part of your role?
I think connecting and making a difference, knowing that people who are in crisis can actually get some help and being able to talk to them and share with them to make a difference.
And what's one thing that people can do today to help?
To make a donation. That is really critical. So whether it's financial or whether it's actual physical goods that they can donate. It just makes a world of difference and we rely on that.
Now it's time to test your knowledge. Here come the quiz questions for this edition and they're brought to us by Roger.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, Roger here with another quiz. 10 questions, thinking caps on, and away we go. Question 1, half a point each for these. How old are Prince William and Kate? How old is Prince William and how old is Kate? Question 2, who was Lord Haw Haw? Question 3. Joe Biden was the second Catholic president of the United States. Who was the first? Question 4. Who was the first winner of the popular TV series Strictly Come Dancing? She was already well known for something else at the time. Question 5. Who was the second official James Bond? So we're not counting David Niven in a fly-off version of Casino Royale. We're talking about the mainstream James Bonds. The first, of course, was Sean Connery. Who was the second? Question 6. Who succeeded Winston Churchill as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom after the end of the war, 1945? Question 7. Which Saint's Day do we commemorate on December the 26th? December the 26th. Question 8. In which ocean is Christmas Island located? Christmas Island, where it received the bomb tests, atomic bomb tests. Question 9. What are the opening words of the song Winter Wonderland? And finally, question 10. When was the charity single Do They Know It's Christmas first released? It was in Christmas in 19 something. There we go.
TNS Soundings.
Thanks for those, Roger.
I'll get my mind working on them right now. Up next, however, let's have another block of local news.
A Dudley mum is on a mission to support children's mental health and well-being across the Black Country using the simple but powerful magic of books. Erica Jody, founder of Little Boo Books, has launched a community-focused children's book initiative aimed at helping schools, nurseries, and families support young people's emotional well-being through storytelling. Her journey began at home, inspired by her young son. Seeing his face light up when he finds something he loves in a book and watching his imagination grow is what inspired me to start this, Erica said. Books can spark excitement, build confidence, and gently help children understand their feelings. They're more powerful than we sometimes realize. As an independent Usborne partner, Erica brings carefully selected children's books into the community through her pop-up bookshop. But her mission goes far beyond selling books. At the heart of her work is a growing concern for children's mental health. With 1 in 4 children in the UK now experiencing mental health challenges, Erica believes early support is crucial and that books can play an important role. Stories can give children comfort, help them feel less alone, and open up conversations that might otherwise be difficult, she explained. To mark Mental Health Awareness Week, May 11th through the 17th, Erica is launching children's mental health book bundles for local nurseries, primary schools, and secondary schools. Each bundle is thoughtfully tailored to different age groups and designed to support emotional well-being, resilience, confidence, and understanding feelings. The initiative is being supported by local businesses and community groups who are being invited to sponsor bundles and help place these resources directly into educational settings where they are needed most. High Sheriff Award winner Shaz Salim said, "Meeting Erica and learning of her vision has inspired me to support her. We, the Salim Foundation, are proud to sponsor and support Erica. This is a fantastic initiative, and I encourage everyone to support. At the heart of Little Boo Books is Boo, a friendly squirrel inspired by Erica's own childhood, bringing a personal, comforting touch that resonates with children and families alike. Alongside the book bundles, Erica is encouraging creativity and self-expression through a Little Boo Books bookmark activity. Children are invited to design their own bookmarks, celebrating imagination while also supporting emotional well-being. Families can share creations online, tagging at erica.littleboobooks, hashtag Little Boo Creations, with participants entered into a prize draw to win a free book, with selected designs featured in future prints. Looking ahead, Erica is also planning a summer Look for a Book treasure hunt, where sponsored books will be hidden across the local area for families to discover, encouraging children to get outdoors, step away from screens, and rediscover the joy of reading. Erica hopes her initiative will continue to grow through community collaboration. I'd love to work with others, whether that's supporting schools, hosting events, or simply sharing ideas. Together, we can make a real difference and help more children access the comfort and joy that books can bring. Businesses, organizations, and individuals interested in sponsoring a children's mental health book bundle or supporting upcoming initiatives are encouraged to get in touch. Now, with books becoming more and more accessible, there are many formats we can use to take pleasure in reading a book. With many of us now using electronic devices to both read and listen to audiobooks, passwords are an essential part of life, and we're perhaps no strangers to getting ourselves into a little bit of bother when it comes to remembering and inputting our passwords to log into our accounts, or even into our device, come to think of it. TNF Soundings contributor Lindsay now brings us the history of passwords on World Password Day, which is marked this week on the 7th of May, as we learn about their history and how they can work for individuals with sight loss.
Hello, my name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm, and naturally enough, I called them Cabin Conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin Conversations about World Password Day. The definition of password can mean either a secret word to gain admission to a place, or a string of characters keyed into an electronic device, like a computer, to access a network. World Password Day relates to the latter, and falls on the first Thursday of May, this year the 7th of May. This day came about in a less than efficient way, considering it related to logical security steps in a digital age. Security researcher Mark Burnett has started the idea with a book called Perfect Passwords, suggesting in 2005 that everyone should have their own password days, whereby they update and change their current ones. Later, the American multinational technology corporation Intel, known for their central processing microchip unit for over 50 years, took up the mantle and created a worldwide observance in 2013. Their aim to communicate and educate people about creating strong passwords and the importance of regularly updating them to remain information secure online. In fact, it was the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, in 1961, which established computer password coding, allowing multiple people to use a shared computer system. Yet by 1978, a study published that guessing passwords through knowing certain personal information, like a pet's name, was easier than deciphering the authentication codes. Since 2020, there has been many electronic data breaches, prompting another worldwide survey, citing the top two electronic passwords commonly used and taking less than 1 second to crack by criminals were the number sequence 123456, used by 3.5 million, and the actual noun password, used by 1.7 million people. Talking of fail-safe codes, it was during World War II that huge breakthroughs in both transmitting and decoding secret messages took place. Various nations turned to their indigenous languages for communicating through enemy-occupied territory. The United States military employed 400 to 500 Native American code talkers to operate radios transmitting highly sensitive tactical information between officers and frontline posts, mostly in languages of Navajo, Comanche, and Hopi. It proved successful because the enemy troops could not decipher either their tribal alphabet letters and numbers, nor the made-up terminology systems. For example, in Navajo, there is no word for submarine, so they dubbed them iron fish. The British Army too had a bash at using the native Welsh language, though not to any great extent, and soon found it cumbersome to continue. During the same war, though only civilians, the Channel Islanders switched from their usual English and French to draw on their native Je'e language when informing each other of invaders' activities and passing vital information to British forces while under enemy occupation. Bletchley Park, Milton Keynes, Buckinghamshire, also became a place of surprising ingenuity in 1939. People from all occupations in Britain were recruited for their intelligence and linguistic abilities. They began with just 200 staff, then by 1944, a significant jump to 9,000, all joining the British government Station X, Code and Cipher School. To help the war effort, they deciphered enemy transmissions, proving an advantage to the British military, either by preempting battles or interfering with enemy communicated plans. This work, headed by Alan Turing, British mathematician, computer scientist, logician, and cryptanalyst, paved the way for building the first domestic computer, an essential in modern day life. As a point of interest, Bletchley Park is now a museum open daily, offering audio description electronically for two exhibitions: multimedia, large print, tactile and braille guides, and is guide dog friendly. Of course, those with visual impairment do face unique challenges utilising electronic technology because of creating, entering and managing passwords. Codes, which are reliant on conventional systems providing visual prompts. Coping with these is done by combining assistive technologies, accessible software and tactile methods along with secure strategies. Screen readers like JAWS, NVDA and VoiceOver are converters of text to speech or braille. Although less than 1% of UK visually impaired people can read braille, so most will need headphones for privacy when listening to spoken text in public places. Password management tools such as 1Password or Bitwarden can be helpful, as some companies like Apple, with their iCloud keychain, build in unique password security systems. Increasingly popular for everyone are biometrics, which only require touchscreen devices to accept individuals' fingerprints or face recognition, unlocking networks. Though to add another layer of security for particularly sensitive information, besides passwords and PIN digits, are the two-factor authentication, 2FA, services, which often link with a one-off code via phone text or email account entered after users' passwords. The Royal National Institute for the Blind People, RNIB, also have assistive technology for computers too. Whether speaking secret codes or entering digital passwords, security is best served by keeping track of individual preferences and systems. May you secure some time to review and update key details.
DNF soundings.
Next up, we have another block of local news. In a moment, we should be hearing from Brecon's Talking News contributors Michael and Leslie Bracher with their wonderful podcast, Round the Reeking. But before that, we thought we'd actually take ourselves to the ancient stronghold of the Reeking and remind ourselves of a fascinating achievement from nearly half a century ago, where 17,000 people worked together to put the Reeking in the Guinness Book of Records. It is an achievement that seems scarcely believable, but the story of this Shropshire World Record is a truly remarkable one. Back on Monday, May the 4th, 1981, thousands of county residents gathered with the intention of completing an astonishing task: to link a human chain around Shropshire's famous landmark hill, the Wrekin. The pictures from the event show the scale of the task, with around 17,000 people turning out to link arms in a gigantic chain around the huge hill. The efforts, completed with diligent organisation and publicity in an age long before social media, secured the participants a place in the famous British institution, the Guinness Book of Records. At the time, the book was a staple of many a Christmas stocking, recounting incredible feats from across the globe. The Shropshire charity event, named Hands Around the Wrekin and organised by Shropshire Weekly Newspapers, secured the place for the longest human chain in the 1982 edition of the book the following year. It was a record that stood until 2004, when it was beaten in Bangladesh by an effort involving more than 5 million people stretching for an astonishing 652 miles. The 1981 event was an occasion that truly captured the attentions of the Shropshire public, set to the theme tune of John Lennon's song Imagine. Reports from the time detail Salopians flocking from across the county to play their part in the huge human effort. The Shropshire Star's Toby Neal revisited the occasion in a report back in 2019, revealing that the day was not without cost, with several suspected broken bones by the time the chain had been completed. He wrote, "The day started overcast and misty, and as people arrived, they were directed where to go. By 10 a.m, there were 7 discos around the Wrekin. Helping the organisation with their radio equipment were soldiers of the Queen's Own Mercy and Yeomanry, while a helicopter overhead carried members of the press. Excitement rose as the midday link-up time drew closer, but there was a delay of about half an hour caused by a medical emergency. A 15-year-old diabetic boy from St George's who was taking part collapsed when his insulin ran out. He was airlifted to hospital by a helicopter which was carrying a television camera crew. He quickly recovered. There were other casualties too on the day. A couple of youngsters had suspected broken legs, and a man had a suspected fractured pelvis. By 12:30 p.m. the waiting crowd was in position and the word went out to link up. There were more delays at the Wrekin Farm side as the line slowly moved further to meet people lining up from the Forest Glen. The signal for the link-up was blasted out through the sound system to a cue of the chorus of Auld Lang Syne. When the link was finally made, followed by cheering and applause, it formed one long chain of humanity 3.68 miles around the base of the hill. Nobody seems to have been counting exactly how many people took part, and it actually didn't matter, because at the time the Guinness Book of Records did not have a section for human chains, because no confirmed attempt had ever been recorded for a chain of any length. There had been an attempt to surround Barbados with a human chain several years previously, but the details had never been authenticated. In any event, the Wrekin effort made it into the 1982 edition of the Guinness Book of Records. Organisers put the numbers at about 17,000, while the Shropshire Star report estimated the turnout as well over 12,000 people. The event had been the brainchild of reporters on the Telford Journal. The editor, Brian Mason, had asked if they had any bright ideas to publicise the paper. It was a few years later, to celebrate the paper's relaunch in tabloid format, that the idea was taken up. We are pleased to now introduce local author and musical duo Michael and Leslie Brachia in our new podcast star segment, Round the Wrekin, which will champion fascinating accounts of courage and achievement despite life sometimes taking us, well, round the Wrekin and the long way round.
Welcome to Around the Wrekin with Mike and Leslie. And today we're at a place called Wicksall in Shropshire, and we've come to have a look at Wicksall Marina, haven't we, Leslie?
Yes, so we're going to have a look round at the boat and the canal area, and no doubt we'll end up in the cafe.
I think that's got a fair chance of that, because I know we've got Philip with us, and he wants a cup of tea, don't you, Philip? That's it, okay. Speak to you in a minute.
So we decided to go in the cafe first, so we've all had a bite of lunch. Yes, cup of tea for Philip, and we've had jacket potatoes and the most enormous blueberry muffin you've ever seen. So Philip's quite happy now.
Yeah, and that was very nice indeed. Now, I can see across the way there's a sign that says Canal Walk and Dog Wash. Shall we go and have a look at, there's a map there.
Let's go and read the map.
Okay, come on, Philip. Okay, it says here, there's a big map. Explore the mosses. I'll just read this bit out. A vast wild place can be found just a mile from here. The mosses of Fens, Wicksall and Bettisfield, a national nature reserve, offer tranquility, big skies and unique wildlife. The name comes from the plants that cover them in a wet, spongy mosaic of starry vegetation, an array of different bog mosses. So we're looking at one of these maps that says you are here.
Yes, and all the things that I was interested in seeing from having checked out the website look to be some distance away. There's a bird hide. We've done one of those before, haven't
we? Yes.
Looking out over water to see the birds. And then there's something called the Mammoth Tower that I'd be interested in seeing.
But we're told that it's very wet at the moment.
Yes, a bit boggy along the path.
So we're just going
to... We might have to turn back.
Yeah, we'll just go through this gate and... Here we go.
So the dog wash is literally a shower to spray your dog with if it's been in the water or got muddy.
Yeah.
Brilliant idea.
From here, we're on a quite a muddy path. We can't get much further. Apparently, it's pretty wet up there. There's one side is car parks, the dog wash.
The other side, there are five shepherd's huts, which are like little gypsy caravan type things. And they're obviously for people to stay. There's car parking space by each one.
Remind me of the sort of thing that Robson Green stayed in.
That's right, yes. Or the sort of thing that George Clark likes to try out as well.
Yes. So there's some, looks like some reserved parking there.
Yes, those are for the people who, you must be able to book to stay, unless people own those, I don't know.
Let's have a look at the, should we go over and look at the barges?
Yes.
We'll do that. Back at the map, which is entitled Explore the Mosses, some more information. The mosses, like many of the UK's bogs, were badly damaged over the centuries, but since 1990 a process of restoration has been underway, leading to significant recovery and flourishing wildlife. Today the mosses once again ooze with water and wildlife. A healthy bog such as this stores huge amounts of carbon, making it a vital asset in the battle to control climate change. There's a bit more here. You can explore the mosses along a series of well-marked trails. A short walk along the canal, approximately 2,700 steps from here, brings you to the Mammoth Tower, from which you have a panoramic view of the landscape, while a spectacular bird hide at Charles Sinker Fields, approximately 2,850 steps from here, provides opportunities to see wetland birds on a large, shallow pool. Leslie?
The last little bit says, stick to the trails when walking on the mosses and keep dogs on leads. Smoking is prohibited as fire is a great hazard on peat bogs. Walking boots or Wellingtons are recommended as adders are present, but you are unlikely to see one.
Well, they'd never mentioned the snakes, did they? Okay, we'll go and pass the cafe and have a look at the barges.
So now we're standing outside the cafe and the seating area, and we've got an excellent view of the marina itself from here. It's quite windy, so the water's rippling a lot. I've just counted, and I think there are 16 barges across nearest to us, and then probably another 40 behind, a lot more than I was expecting.
40 or 50 barges.
I can see one older looking barge in the distance that's got smoke coming out, so there's obviously somebody in there keeping warm. And when we're sitting in the cafe, I spotted that one of these other boats has got somebody on board. But mostly it's quite quiet and not much going on. So perhaps people don't live on the barges full time. Perhaps they keep them moored here and come at weekends or something.
It occurred to me with the problem that happened in Whitchurch with the collapse of the canal. I wonder whether that's restricted people going north.
Yes, it may be that people are having to stay put for the time being.
Or go south.
Because they can't, get any distance because of the gap.
Yeah.
Because that was just before Christmas, and then just after Christmas there was another collapse. And a different canal, sort of Chester area, so that's going to have a significant impact on through travel in the sort of northwestern Cheshire area.
Hello, we just met a chap called Keith, who has a narrow boat at the marina. Just say hello, Keith. Oh,
hello.
And I'm Mike. This is Leslie and Philip.
Yeah.
So where's you've got a boat over there?
Yes, my boat's Leonard. It's 61 and a half foot.
Yeah.
Boat. What we call a semi-tug.
Yeah.
Yes, I've been moored here 2.5 years.
Right.
And I really enjoy the mooring here because it's in a really good position.
Yes.
It's well maintained.
Yes.
And we have to have a good selection of services here.
Yes, we've just had a meal here, which is very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you live on the boat full time?
Yes. It's my home.
Yes.
So where were you born? Are you local to here?
I was born in Hertfordshire, actually.
Oh, right, okay.
But okay. I'm a horticulturalist by profession. And
yes.
I've worked in different parts of the world, and when I came back to England, I decided that I would make my home on a narrowboat.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay. We've only recently moved to Whitchurch from the West Midlands,
yeah,
and we're acutely aware of the problem with the canal there. Has that an impact on you down here? Access to the north.
Not with access to the north, but we can't go beyond Whitchurch to the south and join with the rest of the network. Right. So we're just limited to the Llangollen and any spurs off of the Llangollen, but we can't access any of the network elsewhere in the country.
Okay. I'll just explain, we do this for a charity called Beacon, which is Beacon for the Blind.
Yes.
Near Wolverhampton.
Oh,
yes. A place called Sedgley. Do you know, have you heard of that?
No, I haven't. Because I've spent most of my life abroad, I'm not familiar with all the...
But you know Wolverhampton, you know.
Yeah, I've heard of Wolverhampton.
I've got the hat as well. Yeah, we do this. It's called Talking News, isn't it? So
yes.
we do this, and we do music as well. We're musicians.
Yeah, yes.
But we do this for the Beacon charity. So people can listen to these things, places we go of interest.
Yes.
So we've done quite a few. It's called Around the Wrekin with Mike and Leslie.
I see.
We haven't actually been up the Wrekin itself.
We're not brave enough for that yet.
Did you manage to go onto the Wicksall Mosses?
It's very wet.
No, it's too bad. The gentleman warned us that it was going to be a bit boggy down there today.
So we'll come back when it's dry.
Yeah, it really is. There's some beautiful walks there. I walk regularly.
We've not chosen the best day for today.
Yeah. And you can also walk in the opposite direction.
Yes.
Towards... there's about a mile and a half going up to Pool End. You can actually do a circular walk and come back, which is about 3 miles. But you can do up to 7 miles up on the mosses. The cafe has a list of walks that you can do from here with trails.
Yeah.
So. It's well worth a day visit.
We'll give you a card.
Okay.
That's me, because I'm an author and we'll send the music and website and give you a card then. That's what,
okay, thank you very much.
That's all right. It's really interesting to talk to you. So
we'll let you get back to your work.
We will let you get back to your work.
Yes, I'm just helping. I'm just helping out, doing a little bit of clearing up.
Yes. Yep. So thank you very much indeed.
No, it's a pleasure. Okay. Yeah, okay. I wish you well.
And you, thanks. Bye-bye, Ben. Bye-bye.
So we're back at the car and ready to head for home now. So this has been a curtailed visit to Wixall Marina. Perhaps we'll come back another time and let you know how we get on. So this has been Around the Wrekin with Mike and Leslie. I'm Leslie.
And I've been Mike.
And we'll see you again next time. Bye.
Bye.
Now, here come the quiz answers.
TNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, Roger back again with the answers to our general knowledge quiz. Question one was, how old are Prince William and Princess Kate, the royals? And the answer to that is they're both 43. Although Kate is marginally the elder of the two of them by a few months. Question two. Who was Lord Haw-Haw? Well, Lord Haw-Haw was the mocking name given to him by the Brits for William Joyce, who was a traitor of the First Order, broadcasting Germany Calling and spouting destabilizing rubbish on behalf of the Germans during World War II. Question three. If Joe Biden was the second Catholic president of the United States, who was the first? Well, that was John F. Kennedy. Question four. The first winner of Strictly Come Dancing was newsreader Natasha Kaplinsky. Natasha Kaplinsky, who moved on in life and is now, at the time of this recording, the head of the British Board of Film Censors, or whatever its current name is. Question five. Who was the second official James Bond, who was also the shortest lived? And that was George Lazenby. George Lazenby. Question six. Who succeeded William Winston Churchill as Prime Minister of the UK in 1945. That was Clement Attlee. Clem Attlee. Question seven. Which Saint's Day did we celebrate on December the 26th? That was Saint Stephen. Question eight. On which ocean is Christmas Island? It is in the Indian Ocean. The opening words, number nine, opening words of Winter Wonderland are sleigh bells ring. Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? Etc. And question 10, another Christmassy themed one. When did the recording of Do They Know It's Christmas first get released? And that was Christmas 1984. 10 questions, which you either got a full mark for 9 of, or maybe half, with Prince William being 43 and Kate also being 43. So they were half each. Thank you for listening. Bye.
TNS Soundings.
Thank you all for tuning in to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. It's wonderful to have you all here with us. Time now to grab yourselves a cuppa, find your comfy spot and nestle down, as we've got our exclusive new drama series, Leaford Village, that even features a catchy theme tune, composed by the outstandingly talented pianist Matthew Richards. To note, Leaford Village will be running once a month on the Talking News, so stay tuned for tales of some ordinary and not so ordinary village folk of Leaford.
Leaping Village, Episode 15, Questions, Questions. Written by Michael Brackier and John Marks and read by Michael and Leslie Brackier. Previously in Leaford Village, Frank wants confirmation of the booking for the fake committee. Zach wants to win the pound challenge, and Alan has received texts from both Sherry and Linda, one to meet him on Tuesday, the other on Wednesday.
Nick, glad I caught you.
What is it, Frank? I've got a meeting in half an hour.
A few weeks ago, we talked about grasping the nettle by the horns. You never got back to me.
Eh?
The village fate. Jessica was quite rude to me, talked about beating a hasty retreat.
Yes, I remember you being sarcastic.
I was not.
Look, Frank, we've never seen eye to eye, but I've always thought of you as an honest chap. It may have been sarcasm, but you did say that we should stay out of the way when the committee meets.
Okay, let's call a truce.
Well, do you still want the room?
14th of next month, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Suits me, diary's clear that day.
By the way, Nick, what is wrong with your girlfriend? Not the business of the fire, is it?
Gloating, Frank?
Don't start that again. No, really, is she all right? She's been sniffy with me a couple of times this week.
If you must know, we think it was arson.
Can't be, can it?
Looks like it.
Any suspects?
Being looked into, and it's for the police to decide what happens next. Please don't repeat any of this. I know what you're like.
You've insulted me now, Nick, but I'll let it go. We have to work together, don't we?
You mean you want me on the committee?
Oh, no, sorry, you misunderstood. You still don't qualify, do you? Your role is to provide the room and refreshments.
Zach is ready this time. Jack Simmons and his pound challenge, he thinks. Who does he think he's kidding? Let's see if we can make it more interesting.
Hi, Zach. Who's this, then? Inquires George Owens.
This is Claire, a friend from school.
Blame Truant, then, he says, smiling.
No, study period. We're supposed to be in the library.
I'll bring you to the market, then, looking for a bike.
You're looking after Jack's stall as well. Didn't know you were into clothes and toys.
Cheeky monkey. Dental appointment. Cover him while he's away.
Look, George, any chance of a quick chat with you and the lads?
What about?
Jack's pound challenge is tonight. I thought we might spice it up a bit.
Sounds interesting. I'll give Ken a shout. I think Cody's around here somewhere. Buying cards, I think.
Claire gazes at Zach, impressed that he can deal with anyone. Even Mum and Dad like him, she thinks. It's his eyes, clear and blue. They sparkle when he talks. I'm so lucky.
Penny for him, love, says Ken, unwittingly breaking the spell.
Oh, I'm admiring the rally pioneer on George's stall.
A hybrid, jumps in George.
How much?
To you, darling, £260. Normally £295.
Claire has no intention of buying a bike, but she tries to clear her thoughts.
What's up? Says Cody, leaning on Ken's shoulder. Young Zach wants a few words, said George.
Thanks for your time, lads. You all know about tonight at the Cross. We could do one over, Jack, if you're interested, says Zach.
I'm always interested, quips Cody.
Why don't we throw the challenge back at our friend Mr. Simmons?
Tell us more, Zach, says George.
We up the ante. Say we offer him a stake of £3 each and get him to pay out £6 for each winning answer.
What's the point of that?
That's just the start. He's a gambler, is Jack. I reckon there'll be at least 15 to 20 people in the pub tonight who will have a go. That's at least £45 in Jack's kitty to start with. Why don't we tell him he can make £10 clear profit minimum if he offers a prize of £35 for anyone who gets all four answers right?
How do you know it's four quotes?
I saw him yesterday and asked him.
What's the split then? Asks George.
Me and Claire are both in, aren't we? Looking to his girlfriend for support. She nods and Zach continues. That's five of us. Me, Claire, you, George, Cody and Ken. Five-way split. £7 each.
Not much in it for us, is there? And anyway, we've got to get the answers right. We've never done that well before, declares Ken, puffing his chest out as if to emphasise his seniority.
That's where I come in. I can find anything on my smartphone in seconds. The money's not the thing. And don't forget, we get Jack to commit to £6 for each correct answer as well. That's £59 in total. He'll be out of pocket and we'll have a bit of fun. Claire giggles at Zach's ingenuity and the way he can control men twice, three times his age. And those eyes. Can't wait to get him back home with him. She muses. Mum and Dad are out.
He's off again. Love's young dream. Thinking about that hybrid again. Young Claire, jokes George.
Are you all in, lads? Asks Zach.
Should be a giggle, answers George. I'm in, from Ken. Just a yip from Cody, and they disperse as they spot Jack turning the corner by the cross, holding his mouth with a grimace that can be seen from 30 yards.
Right, everybody ready, says Zach.
Zach's forecast was correct. The pub is packed. Always a buzz on Pound Challenge night. How many tonight, Jack? Inquires Ted.
Two. Got a sore mouth. Want to keep it basic and short tonight.
What? You can't do that. You promised four. Do you know four quotes? Or are you losing the plot? Yeah, promise is a promise, shouts George from the back of the room.
Okay. Four it is. Ken, Cody and George approach Jack, putting Zach's proposition to him, leaving Zach and Claire out of it. They are his mates. He listens to them. It's a deal. Sounds great. I like a challenge. And the chance to make a few quid.
Order, shouts Ted. Someone mutters to Zach about underage drinkers.
Yes, we're 17 and drinking J2O, all right?
The complainant silenced, Ted sets the ground rules and prepares the quotation gladiators for battle. Let's have some hush. Pound challenge, folks. £3 each at the counter, and don't forget to order more drinks after to either celebrate or drown your sorrows. Thank you. Typical publican, mutters someone in the crowd, probably Frank.
Right, lads and lasses, let's get started. I'll give you all four quotes. You can write them down, and then you've got 2 minutes.
The meeting at the market had concluded with the agreement that Zach would give George all the answers. Cody, Ken, Claire and Zach would each go forward with their individual solutions.
Here we go. Number one, an easy one to start. It's freezing and snowing in New York. We need global warming. Number two, the way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. Number three, the greatest glory in living lies not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall. Number four, didn't I help it? I just took it back is all. Awful tired now, boss. Dog tired.
Zach has the answers in under 90 seconds.
George, go and get your 6 quid. It's Donald Trump. Claire, number two is Walt Disney. Cody, you have number three, Nelson Mandela. I'll take four.
What the hell was four? Asks George.
The character John Coffey in the film The Green Mile. I knew it anyway.
The first two individual prizes are taken. Then Frank Watson calls for attention. What's going on, Frank? Demands Ted. Cheating, that's what's going on. What do you mean? Ask young Zach to bring his smartphone to the front. I remember Ian Beale doing this scam in EastEnders years ago. Sorry, Jack, but you've been stitched up.
Tuesday, 4:30 p.m. One thing you can say about Sherry, she's rarely late. Linda will claim that her sister possesses many attributes, tardiness not being one of them. They have an early tea together, both offering the other their own spurious version of their plans for the evening. Sherry wants to make sure that her older sister is nowhere near Leaford Library at the time she's meeting Alan. I'm meeting some old college mates in East Banfield. Where are you off to?
Me, says Linda. Oh, popping into Wolverhampton. The club shop has a sale. They're open till 8.
Good. Get me one of those T-shirts.
Which one, Chez?
You know, the one with the Mexican flag on the number 9. No more than a tenner.
If they've got them.
Ta.
Who are these mates? Asks Linda.
You never got to know my friends at Banfield College, did you?
Suppose not. Anyway, got to get ready.
And me.
Bags me the bathroom first. Tuesday, 5:45 p.m. Linda is on her way. In traffic, it's about 20 minutes from North Banfield to Wolverhampton. Sherry had left the flat 15 minutes before her and is in position, aware of the camera. They've had a lot of vandalism in the car park shared with the doctor's surgery. She knows where to stand, just out of the camera's line of sight, but she can't see the entrance to the car park from there.
He won't be here till after 6, Sherry thinks. I'll hear the car passing down the side of the library. Oh, my God. Alan Gomez. He's gorgeous and he fancies me. He picked me, not Linda. She hears the car. It's 5:55 p.m. He's early.
The car stops at the corner of the building, a few yards before the right turn. The door slams. Footsteps. He's coming. The evening shadow is thrown across the corner into the centre of the camera's invisible beam. Sherry catches her breath, expectant. She looks up.
Linda. Sherry can't contain herself. What the hell are you doing here?
Linda has a sudden thought and checks her phone. I should have come tomorrow, Wednesday, 6 p.m, she thinks.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!